Welcome to Supply Chain Next with your host, Richard Donaldson. Join us as we explore the ongoing evolution of supply chain, from the challenges professionals face every day to the ongoing digital transformation of the entire value network.
And welcome to the next episode of Supply Chain Next. And today's episode is a little bit different because we're actually bringing in a couple people, Steve Cotton and David Regan of Aqua Metals, and super thrilled to have both of them here and tell a story about their origin stories, how they got involved with Aqua Metals, but also about how Aqua Metals is sort of a startup. I'll let Steve and David get into it, but it's at the forefront and vanguard of converting the lithium linear supply chain to a circular supply chain, and the story is going to tell itself. It's fascinating. So welcome, Steve and David, to the show.
Thanks. Thank you.
Absolutely. So without further ado, I'm going to jump right in and just kind of get into it. I'm going to start with Steve there. Steve, you've got in a pretty amazing story that predates Aqua Metals. And I'm going all the way back. I look back there and I'm seeing some telecom sales back in the day. And I even think you had a brief stint at Sendmail. This is going back to the internet, days, right? At the beginning of it, right? Late 90s, early 2000s. But tell everyone a little bit about yourself and where you came from and how you kind of got into this journey.
Yeah, I'm amazed you brought up Sendmail. I've slept a few times since I've thought about mail.
I like to dig in a little bit deep. Man.
Right.
I don't know who I'm talking to.
Who are you? Where are you from? Yeah. So, all right. Well, my career started in telecom with a company called Octel. They invented voicemail. And we ultimately grew that company from about a $40 million company to a billion and change exit to Lucent Technologies. But I spent the very formative years of early years of my career there with a larger entity, larger corporation. I started off in product management, and then did international stuff, and then got into market development, business development, when I saw the salespeople making more money than the poor product managers.
I feel that too, Steve. Trust me, I get it.
So that was about a 12-year stint all in. And then Sendmail was one of the companies subsequent to that acquisition of Lucent. Being born and bred in Silicon Valley, what startup are you going to do next? Right. And Sendmail was one of them. And that was interesting to try to commercialize something that you pay for that used to be free and still was free and is free today with a supportable mail transfer agent for messaging. And we successfully commercialized that business. And ultimately that it got acquired, et cetera. And then from there, I started getting kind of more interested in batteries and energy. And I ended up moving, long story short, from San Francisco to Mill Valley and kind of kicking off a rebirth of a company in the garage in Mill Valley that did battery monitoring systems. And ultimately grew that over about 8 or 9 years to a global provider of batteries, battery monitoring systems, and battery monitoring services in a network operations center for reliability and asset management for all the major data center operators. And that's kind of how we met at one of these gatherings of all the data center operators, figuring out what their next big grand plans are. Right. And so that company was called Data Power Monitoring, and then it was called IntelliBat for intelligent batteries. And then we had cabinets with the batteries and rows and kilotons of these things that we would then monitor with our own little hockey pucks that glowed green, yellow, and red, and then decommission these battery strings at the end of life. And then I started dealing with smelters, because where do all these lead batteries go at the end of life? And then I saw how horrific that was. In the meantime, that business grew so quickly that it ultimately got acquired by a private equity firm in 2012. And then I saw an opportunity after exiting, after the sale of that company, what am I going to do next?
Right.
And maybe it should have something to do with batteries. And I found this really novel way to recycle batteries without all of the nasty smelting and environmental and worker safety issues associated with it. And that was Aqua Metals. And so I ultimately invested in Aqua Metals in 2015, early 2015, and joined the company. And then we, as the chief commercial officer at the time, and then we took the company public in mid 2015. And then we were off on the Aqua Metals venture. leading up to where we are today. And it's been quite a journey building Aqua Metals so far to where we stand today.
Absolutely. And Steve, and I know that's your origin story, and you've got a confident humility about you as you fly over a few of these things, because there's more to it than just some of the things you're saying. And one of the things I want to double click on, and David, don't get too quiet there, because I'm coming after you in a second to get your origin story. But we got Steve here for a second. So Steve, though, you know, looking back on that now and reflecting a little bit and even telling that story, did you ever think, you know, where you are now, that you would have kind of followed that path? Because there's nothing that's, I mean, there's a sales story, you're building companies, you know, but you kind of did this whole telecom sales thing. You have this entrepreneurial spirit. You found yourself kind of in batteries, but you've just been building things all along as you go. So question really is looking back on that, did you see a plan there, or is it just kind of all came together?
Well, it's kind of funny. The running joke when I was a product manager with my fellow product managers way back in the days, we would say, oh yeah, when I was a kid, I said, all I want to be when I grow up is a product manager, not
right.
So you know, you think you're going to be something else. And then over time, it's just the forks in the road and the turns in the trail that lead you to the next thing. Right. And for me, I was always interested in systems and physicality. And so there's a common thread there with the voicemail systems. They were giant, you know, sub-zero size refrigerators that we would sell to the regional Bell operating companies, and they had a physicality to them. But there was also a services and interesting technology behind that. And that's what always has attracted me. You know, maybe I should have done software, because I could have been, you know, a billionaire three times over doing AI by now, or who knows, but right. I've always been attracted to the physicality and the product. And so Aqua Metals is obviously in that category for me. You know, here we are making shiny battery metals, and that physicality coupled with the technologies, I think, is the common thread for me.
Yeah, I see that absolutely. And that's a great way to look at it. And furthermore, I also think as you kind of, you know, dig in, from when you started, I'm going to bookmark this question because I want to get to David a little bit, his origin story, but I'm going to have you think about this one for a second. But also within your experiences, as you got to Aqua Metals and your tenure there, those experiences have really lend themselves to how you've built Aqua Metals, that product management experience, that sales experience. You know, it's not like as a CEO, you're not a typical like finance guy that's come out of that track, but your background has lent itself to where you are today and maybe how you've kind of built the Aqua Metals story. And I want to come back to that one in a second.
Sure.
So I'm going to have you hold on thinking on that one. But David, now let me flip over to you. Like, you're kind of listening to this whole story here. And, you know, you're also equally, you know, as you got involved, well, too, as I look in your background, I'm like, okay, how did this guy get into batteries and cycling? So maybe you could just take a second to kind of do the same thing. Where did you come from, and how did you guys merge at some point, David?
Yeah, so I think early in my career, I was really involved in graphic design and branding, and kind of worked my way up through the agency side of marketing and branding. And that life was a little bit hot and cold. It was agency work, you know, it was, you know, feast or famine quite a bit. And then I transitioned into the corporate world on the marketing side, and I ended up in pharma basically, but a kind of an interesting little niche of software for clinical trials.
Okay.
So highly scientific, how to really understand the clinical trial process, the regulatory process, very high tech sales and marketing. It was very interesting. It was challenging in that the pharma industry was actually very, very slow to adopt technology, very slow to adopt cloud computing. They were slower than the banking industry. They're so protective of their data. And my life consisted mainly of trying to convince large pharma who were spending hundreds of thousands of dollars a day on clinical trials to use real-time data analytics on these trials versus looking at Excel spreadsheets that had data 3 to 6 months old. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, it was a very hard sell.
to do
that, because it meant putting their data in the cloud or opening their data to access to other systems and things like that. So it was a really big challenge. I was in that space for, I think, 12 plus years. For the most part. And we got, the company I was with was acquired. And I'd always sort of worked in smaller company environments. I like a startup environment, something fast moving, something that gives me different challenges every day. And we kind of got merged with a company that had about a little over 1,200 people, I'd say. And I wasn't thrilled with that environment, nor what they plan on doing with the software they purchased with our purchase. So I started looking around and just reached out to a friend who was a recruiter and said I was interested in making a transition to green technology. I kind of knew it was something on the move, like an industry that was going to be big in the coming future. I have a very strong environmental beliefs and a passion for the environment. And I immediately got an interview with Steve. And as soon as I had that interview, I just kind of knew I was going to work for Aqua Metals. And that happened in 2017. And I've been involved ever since.
Yeah, I was going to say, even though Steve a little bit earlier than you, but you're very much at the early stages, obviously. Mm-hmm. But they're also similar to Steve in the sense that, you know, when I look at your background, you've got sort of this corporate branding storytelling on a B2B side. Mm-hmm. And that's a framework that can be applied no matter the vertical that you go into. And, mm-hmm. and you hit it, you know, pharmaceuticals to, you know, other technologies, or clinical kind of trials. Mm-hmm. But you're still building a tail to help build that brand to increase sales, right? That's kind of the common thread. So in that experience, as you look back on that before we get to Aqua Metals, because as a fellow brander, I'm salivating for you at having to build a brand and a story around this company and what's going on with lithium and circular, because you're really at the explosive period. You get to write your own, you don't even have to change habits, right? To go back to your experience before where you're changing status quo, which is one of the hardest things in the world to do, even if it's better for people. But where I'm kind of going with this question is a little bit when you reflect on that, for other marketers listening, like what have you learned in building brands in all these different industries that's kind of common? Like what are some of the common big B to big B things that you've kind of learned that are skills that you might be applying now to Aqua Metals? Like, is there something like, for me, I always contrast big B and big B marketing as more thought leadership, you know, a little bit more educational. You know, it's not B2C like a Liquid Death Act, you know, kind of campaign where I've got a cheeky, you know, flash in the pan, and I happen to know the guys that run that. So I'm a huge fan of theirs. But that style of marketing was never going to work for something like Aqua Metals. So there is a stark difference between consumer influencing and business influencing, which is relatively new. And you're a practitioner of that. So what is it that you see in that you're bringing? What have you learned in big B to big B? Because, you know, in a weird sense, it's kind of a new skill right now.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. It is about thought leadership, because what we're doing is creating a vision for the future. And in both cases, in clinical trials, we were trying to move the clinical trials that were run with lots of bodies, Excel spreadsheets, and work on paper, data on paper, to cloud computing, real-time analytics. And what you have to do is build a vision of the future that you're selling. Right. And that's what we're doing here at Aqua Metals as well. We've learned a lot since 2017. We've been involved in trying to displace or disrupt technology in the lead industry. Mm-hmm. And we've learned a lot from that. And it's part of our story, part of our resilience story. And the lessons learned in lead, I'll wait until you ask about it to get into the details of that. But I think there's a lot of story there that applies to what we're doing in lithium. A lot of important lessons learned that we're trying to convey in lithium, to build out that vision and lead with vision for the industry.
Yep. Makes sense. No, that's great. And by the way, thank you, because you just teed up my segue over to Steve now. Because now we kind of go back into the vision side of things, right? You're building a vision. You guys are at the forefront of something that is different, right? We're talking about lithium. We're actually talking about the recycling of lithium, and we're talking about a new method to recycle lithium and reuse it and make it circular. So Steve, as I kind of swing back to you, you know, when you started and you talked about it and you've been here at the forefront, you know, you see this company that's like, you know, batteries, you've already come out of the data centers. It's obviously a big deal. But it's been close to almost 8-9 years, I think, you've been involved. So there's been quite a tale to be told from when you started to where you are now. So Steve, maybe you can kind of tell people a little bit of the Aqua Metals tale, on kind of what you've seen in the leadership position you have. Because I'm sure it's pivoted just a little bit, but it's still core to lithium recycling. But I'm sure there's been some twists and turns in the path, and your product development hat gets to come on here and kind of manage that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, it takes about a decade to figure out who you are.
What's so 10 years before
last company lives, you know, about 12 Avengers. It seems like it's the cycle. But so Aquamedals has been a really interesting journey. It actually started at an auto shop in Oakland, California.
Wow.
And that's where the first pilot unit was there with these little rotating discs that were able to extract this metal right in front of your eyes at room temperature out of what looked like water. And it was mind-blowing for anybody that saw it at the time that, like, wow, this is a totally different way to make an element. And this fundamental way to make an element is super interesting. And it's not electroplating in its purest form. It's a unique way of plating, particularly with the way that we did it with the lead. We did a intentionally bad job of doing it because it's a soft metal and you can kind of gather it up and let it squeegee itself off and move on from there. So that was
before you go forward, Steve, I'm just going to jump in.
Sure.
I apologize because I want to, I think you also kind of, you know, you hit on something. So an auto body shop. Now, I'm going to double click on that one because what in God's name was an auto body shop doing at the time that they're like, oh, hey, let me go try to figure out how to.
Wasn't an auto body shop at the time. It was a former auto body shop.
Okay.
Just some space that was available to go and, with the right kind of permitting because, like for hazardous materials and things like that. And so that's the physical locality where it began.
So did they start with the problem statement that they wanted a cleaner way to recycle lithium and that's what they tackled, or it was sort of an inadvertent?
Started with the cleaner way to recycle lead with a second horizon of lithium.
Got
it. And other types of metals and battery chemistry. So it's not called aqua lead, it's called aqua metal.
Right.
And but the inspiration initially was not only from my experience, but the founder's experience of wow, these smelters are hellscapes.
Right.
And if you've ever walked through one, I recommend you never do again. They're terrifying. And so there's got to be a better way type of a thing. And so let's take this from the Bronze Age to the 21st century and apply some technology and things and solve for worker safety and solve for all these great things. And so that's how it started. And then we took an unusual path to, let's go ahead and just take this thing public.
Right.
Public markets right away, free revenue, the whole deal. And so we did that in 2015 and accessed the capital markets and raised with our IPO in July of 2015, about $28 million. And then we also got a USDA loan guarantee. Okay. And like, why does the U.S. Department of Agriculture care about metals recycling? Well, because we chose a rural area to deploy the first operational systems in the Tahoe-Reno area, in the now infamous practically Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center, where Tesla and SwitchSnap and Google and Microsoft and Apple and we reside, and amongst many others. And so that funding allowed us to build a big plant, which the founders envisioned of let's go big and go straight to the large commercial plant operation. Mm-hmm. And, we've learned a lot along the way that it's really hard to go from a lab to a bench test to a massive facility in one kind of a moonshot. And ultimately, we got the technology to work great, but we had to kind of redo it from within a couple of times, hindsight being 2020, because the company moved too quickly.
Sure.
And to the point where there were some disagreements on strategies and things, and I ended up leaving the company on my own decision in 2017, only to be hornswoggled back by some of the shareholders and an activist investor to lead the company. Fortunately, David survived my absence, came back and basically restructured the company on a go-forward basis, which is where we really got that technology working well. And as David mentioned earlier, the resilience factor started kicking in to see this thing through and make this technology commercially viable. And we were on the precipice with the operations of the lead recycling in late 2019 of making that happen with a idled of the plant in like fall of 2019. in preparations for a standing start to take it to its quadruple of its original capacity to its fully intended design capacity. And we had various trades that were in there while the building was idle to wire things up and weld things and things like that. And unfortunately, due to some unfortunate circumstances, that caused a fire event.
Right.
And we lost all that asset and found ourselves waking up, by the way, about 8 weeks before a pandemic, global pandemic, began, saying, what do we do now?
Oh my God.
So this is more of the resilience story where it was like, okay, we have to rescind the company and begin trying to collect insurance proceeds and get into survival mode, which we did. And we were able to successfully get through those early stages while the pandemic was going on and learning how to use Microsoft Teams and Zoom, using a telephone and all that. And we re-engineered the lead business into a equipment supply and licensing business. And so what we found ourselves doing, and we had to wear N95 masks when we were around the lead stuff.
Yeah.
Our folks were able to continue to work on the technology in an area that didn't suffer from the fire damage. And very quickly, they iterated and doubled and then tripled the throughput of those machines and the capabilities and automated everything and wrote a bunch of software that we now call Pure Metrics. And we built an entire licensing infrastructure around it and pivoted that business to an equipment supply and licensing business that culminated for the lead business in the recent deployment late last year in 2022 in Taiwan with our first licensee there to put a showcase facility there. And that's now up and running for folks in the lead industry to come and take a look at. So we believe that in the long run, there's some great opportunities to sell that equipment and license that technology, but that's got a longer business and market and sales development cycle. But in the meantime, we kept going, well, gee, this electrification of lithium thing is going faster than we ever thought it would. And we learned that when we focused on our core technology and not operating the massive plant, that we could very quickly evolve our tech and innovate. And so we created what we call today our innovation center to do to launch the research and development for the lithium recycling. And that was in around 2019, 2020, we began establishing those early activities around that, you know, as the fire event happened in late 2019 and into 2020. That was a part of our efforts, really accelerated in 2021 and 2022 as we developed and went and basically paraded out, what's everybody else doing?
Right.
We know we don't want to smelt. We know that we don't want to use highly intensive chemicals and make a bunch of waste streams. We know we want to do it cleanly. And we developed a way to do that and solve for the economics. So it's cheaper, you know, better, faster, cheaper, smaller, and all that great stuff.
Right.
And then that's where we embarked upon the innovation of the lithium program to do multi-metal extractions. Mm-hmm. And these are things like, you know, the lithium, the cobalt, the nickel, the copper, the manganese. It's much more complex.
Yep.
In many ways, but we were up to the task because we had gained a lot of confidence in our innovation capabilities. And that really all culminated an announcement that we made today that our pilot operations that we have running 24 hours a day now and 5 days a week have been able to produce in the pilot plant all the full suite of metals. And we are now full steam ahead with the commercial build out from there.
Right.
And we've already established our plans for that, which we can get into more detail and talk about the plans.
Yeah.
But I'll pause there because I gave you a lot of information and that probably generated more questions.
Yeah. No. I mean, I'm sucking it all in as the audience is because, I mean, the tale is an incredible tale. I'm going to kind of pivot a little bit over to David because that opens the door for him to take the baton from you, Steve, and talk a little bit about kind of the fundamental story around what Aqua Metals is doing. I mean, the tale that you're building, David, from Steve's depiction here is around this sort of, I don't want to say it's one, it you've weathered, all pun intended here, the storm, literally of fires and now pandemics. I mean, literally everything that the Bible could throw at you, you know, locusts and all, and come through it. So that tells me not only do you guys have perseverance, resilience, but also maybe there's something here You know, I mean, this is one of those things that sometimes things survive for a reason, right? And underneath the covers, though, and David, this is the question for you. How are you telling the tale around what is the core kind of technological innovation? Because it's the company's name is Aqua Metals. And it started by really breaking apart metals. It led with sort of their lithium as an output, but I'm hearing cobalt and everything else. So there's some really interesting, there's a story around what the world has done historically in melting and smelting that all of a sudden, geez, water, that just seems, what? It seems like, of course, why weren't we doing this before? So David, tell a little bit of the story around what is it, what's underneath the covers of Aqua Metals? What's the story around the innovation?
Well, I think the key innovation is that, and I'd say that we got into, initially, as Steve points out, we were focused on lead.
Yeah.
And we got actually into the lithium battery recycling market a little later than some others, which gave us the advantage of kind of looking across the landscape and seeing what everyone was doing, right? Mm-hmm. There's our old friend smelting, which was kind of the only thing in use at the time.
Yep.
We all know that's really dirty, right?
Yep.
On top of that, when you throw a battery in a furnace, you lose the lithium and you lose the manganese. So it's not very efficient. You get all that carbon. And then you get like basically a hunk of metal out the other end that includes the good stuff like the cobalt and the nickel, but also the stuff you don't want like the aluminum and the iron and things like that. So you actually use chemicals at that point to leach out the metals you do want. And that has waste streams as well. Mm-hmm. So there's all these challenges on that old way of recycling lithium-ion batteries. There was kind of a newish way that was just a hydrochemical approach, right? So you grind up the batteries and you make what they call black mass. It's like a powder of the batteries. And then you use chemicals to extract out the high value minerals. So like the cobalt, the lithium, the nickel. And there's a few challenges with that. One is all these chemicals cost a lot of money.
Right.
You need to store them. You need to move them logistically.
Mm-hmm.
And in the hydrometallurgical process, you actually have to add chemicals, keep adding chemicals in to pull chemicals out. So by definition, you're adding in pollutants or not, let's say, things that are going to take your products out of spec.
Right.
And so we're seeing that when we saw early on that they might have challenges meeting product spec, getting to purity levels. That you're going to need to get to with the battery industry, which has very, very, very tight tolerances. And there's huge amounts of waste streams. When you're churning through all those chemicals, mm-hmm. you're getting waste streams, particularly a waste stream called sodium sulfate. Mm-hmm. And in a hydro plant, they're going to produce a ton or more of sodium sulfate for every ton of black mass they process. So, that's something they have to landfill. Some companies plan on pumping it into the ocean.
Right.
And when you get to millions of tons of batteries that need recycling, one, the carbon footprint is not acceptable or not tenable. And then the waste streams of all the landfill material is not tenable either. So we looked at this, we saw those challenges, and we went with renewable electricity. So instead of using heat and furnaces or chemicals as sort of a catalyst, we use renewable electricity and, you know, some chemicals in a mostly water solution. And this means we don't have any sodium sulfate production. We have, you know, extremely low waste streams and no carbon footprint on site. So we've built, we think, a much better mousetrap. We get to high purity metals where in the industry, there's already technology out there to take high purity metals to battery precursors. So we don't have to reinvent the wheel there. So we think we had the advantage of coming in, seeing what everybody else was doing, kind of picking that apart, seeing the hurdles and pitfalls that they were going to confront. And we went the different route, which is the key piece of it is renewable electricity.
Yeah. So, again, kind of rehashing a little bit on that, and there's so much information in there. Historically, you know, not to dumb it down here a little bit, fire was the answer to everything. I'm going to burn everything, you know, garbage. I'm going to smelt stuff, you know, and as we've now learned, fire is bad. Let's go back to water.
Burning things, not so good.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Because a building burned down, so it would have been easier if it was flooded, right? But the point being is then all of a sudden you come along and it just seems so commonsensical. You know, let's use water and essentially we're going to use now electricity in lieu of this fire heat to catalyze and create this slurry, right? This black goo that is now kind of the broken down particles. And somehow you're able to extract out of it all of these precious metals, right? In this sort of, you know, circular process, because you're really getting to go back into a circular fashion. And what I want to double click on there, David, is part of that tail end of the story is you guys are also at the forefront of really the circular movement, right? I mean, all the things that you're moving along here, carbon, yes, absolutely. But you're really connecting all the way back by saying, I don't want to mine anything out of the ground anymore, virgin material. You're looking at the 700 to 800,000 tons of lithium above ground, non-virgin, right? When it's end of life, you get it, go through this process using the slurry and the water and everything. And now all of a sudden you've created a circular loop, right? Avoiding the need to go for virgin materials. That must be, and I'm getting giddy thinking about it, but I mean, I imagine for you as a storyteller here, especially right now, that's got to be just huge.
Yeah, and we think it is the big story, and we think most of the media has kind of missed it. You know, I think there were big names that got into the recycling space early on, very well funded, and basically touted their technology and touted their environmental credibility. But I think the media as a whole has sort of said, okay, well, that's taken care of. And just because it's called recycling, a lot of folks assume it's green. But when we looked at it, we saw, you know, what we're trying to do is to lower global carbon emissions as a whole. And corporations are trying to lower their particular carbon footprint. And when we looked at what was going into place, we're going to make all these strides electrifying transportation. But it was going to be a huge step backwards to recycle those batteries in the old-fashioned way. It was going to be a big hit on the footprint, and that was the piece that was missing, and that's what we really innovated for. And we think the media still hasn't quite caught up to the whole carbon footprint of recycling and the waste streams of recycling. And so we're really trying to tell that story.
Tell
that story to you.
Yeah, well, and I that's what I picked up on when I met you guys the second or third time, whenever it is, at the Hive conference, right? And that's what jumped at me, because that was sort of my thing. I took whatever eBay, blah, supply chain, and got into circular. But I couldn't agree with you more. I think we've had what I'm going to call, I use the phrase ignorant certainty. Okay? We've got a lot of ignorant certainty going on that this is the only thing, it has to be this way. And boy, after about the few months, we find out, whoops. Maybe that wasn't the right thing to do, right? And we kind of get wrapped around the axle with recycling. Like, we almost have to come off it. It's almost like that status quo you said earlier in your career, right? People get stuck in ignorant certainty, thinking this is the only thing I can do. I'm certain about it. And it ends up actually not being the greatest thing ever. And I think that's where the circularity is one of those that's now coming up, you know.
And it's super important, because the big lesson we learned, or one of the big lessons we learned in our lead experience, was that, you know, they had spent hundreds of millions of dollars in the lead industry putting in recycling infrastructure that was smelting to displace all that. You know, those things run 24/7. To tear it out and put new technology in disrupts their business. It's a lot more capital for them. You know, there wasn't this big national, international push to green that technology out. And so the displacement was really difficult. So if we get this wrong on the lithium side, if we put in hundreds of millions of recycling infrastructure for lithium batteries, that's dirty, it's going to be super hard to tear, and very, very expensive to tear that back out and do it right the second time. So we're really trying to tell the story so that we get this right the first time, because we know in lead, you know, they haven't been able to tear it all out and get it right.
And that's it's a wonderful stepping stone back over to Steve here a little bit, because that kind of gives you the entree. Like, there was a plan. You get into Aqua Metals, you kind of get this thing going, and all these things start coming together, and chance favors the prepared. One of my other favorite things, right, to say. And in this case, you guys, 10 years of preparation to be at the right place at the right time with the right story. So Steve, looking at this, and you talk about Aqua Metals, but kind of, you know, take a step forward a little bit. You guys have accomplished so much, but there's so much more to be done over the next 10 to 20 years. I mean, you really are sitting, Steve, at something that is explosive, right? With everything you're doing, you're hitting on circularity at a time when this is now becoming, to David's point, I think the narrative is shifting now in the whole world of sustainability towards circularity. And I think you're going to see in the next couple of years that become almost everything, right? And we can talk about that. But Steve, where do you see Aqua Metals moving forward? I mean, you talk about metals. I mean, there's so much to apply here. You know, what's the future look like for you guys a little bit?
Well, so yeah, I mean, it's electrification of the transportation and stored energy and new energy with solar and wind. You know, wind doesn't blow during the day, it blows at night. Sun shines during the day, doesn't at night, where you can store that energy. Batteries and all the circularity and electrification is so critical. And then we look at it and say, well, everybody gets very excitable about the electrification of transportation, sometimes because there's sexy car involved.
Yeah, sure.
And you go, wow, they're better, they drive better, and they're all these things. And by the way, they do.
Yeah.
And with our dog eats the own dog food, I think we're almost up to half our employees are driving EVs because we get a little green. Right. But what about the backbone of that electrification? You have to electrify that. You can't just, as David was saying, say, oh, recycling, it's good.
Yeah, right.
We'll use fossil fuels for that. And we'll just transfer all the fossil fuels that we're burning out of our tailpipes as an open sewer in the atmosphere, then have these backwoods areas where we're just kind of quietly burning and smelting things so we can feel good about our electric cars. It doesn't make any sense.
Right.
And so we look at it as like, let's electrify the infrastructure that closes the loop and creates that circularity. So that too can be as clean as to the transportation being electrified and all these other things. And so that's really the core goal that we solve for with our technology. And then, by the way, there's no such thing as a sustainable business that doesn't have a sustainable business model where you could make money doing it. And we made sure with the lithium business that we would be the low-cost producer. Mm-hmm. And that is key because we believe that our conversion costs of all these metals that come out of these lithium batteries that we can cleanly get back into the system, we can do that at a favorable economics. And then that allows us to have the best shot at achieving the goal of building the right infrastructure the first time that we don't have to tear out, that we could actually tell our kids and our grandkids, hey, we're proud that we did that and not apologize to them for making the world a worse place for them and their offspring. If it exists at that point because of all this poison we're putting into our thin blue line and all that. So that's really the core to our mission, and we view this lithium battery space as super critical to affect all of these goals. But now, what's our long-term horizon? It's beyond all these exciting things we're doing in lithium. You know, we also can go after things like mining tailings and grab gold and silver and things along those lines, and do some potentially like environmental cleanup while extracting truly precious metals. Critical battery metals. And that's something that we see an interest in the future. But right now, it's all about focus. And there's plenty of wood to chop when it comes to getting this where it needs to be. But it is a really exciting time right now. And the oil and gas industry is going to transition to the new energy world. And there's a lot of players. There's going to be a lot of consolidation. There's going to be a partnership announced every day. And ultimately, let the best technology and the best business models win. Some of the business models with worse technology are going to win. But what our goal is to have the best technology with the best economic model, so we have a double chance of winning.
Right. And absolutely. And a couple things, salient points there. One, glad you also brought it up, because you're like every other entrepreneur, especially when you've got an exciting platform like this, you're going to have everyone's going to be like, oh, you got to do this. And focus is, that's really hard. There's a cacophony of voices telling you to do, 10 billion things. It's like, hey, we only can do 1, 2, and 3, right? Like, let's stay focused. However, you also opened the door for me, which is the question I was kind of leading into, which is underneath the covers, to me, what I'm hearing is you have a very unique, clean, sustainable way of isolating elements, right, from within a mixture of elements. And that application today is being applied to a lithium battery or that kind of system where you're basically breaking it down to its core constituent elements and then kind of refurbishing them to go back in circular. And you brought it up though, but do you see a future where you're going to go to the front end of the supply chain in the actual mining extraction? I don't know much about mining extraction and creation of new lithium and how you guys have a cleaner, more efficient way of helping in that front end of the supply chain.
For sure. So the mining world can also have upgrades in terms of the way that the mining is done, and then the processes behind that front end stuff to make those metals. We see huge opportunity there, and so do other players in the industry. We see some players in the industry that are trying to do both at the same time, and right. It goes back to pick one piece of candy out of that jar so your hand doesn't get stuck in the jar. And so that's another part of our horizons. You know, we're a urban miner today, highly rich ore happening to be discarded iPhones, and leaf blowers, and electric vehicles, and data center batteries, and all those things. Over time, we see great opportunity in that mining world to upgrade that as well. So that's part of that circularity story and kind of the electrification of mining and the closing of the loop with the mining processes we see is a huge opportunity. And one other thing I'll just while I'm thinking about it is I pointed out earlier that we are a publicly listed company, right? And so we're not as good as Patagonia, where Earth is our shareholder, right? Which we've been learning about, which is amazing. Right. But we derive our funding from Joe Sixpack, Robin Hood investor, all the way through institutional funds to drive this all forward. And some other companies that are doing this are privately held. And so they don't have to disclose and be transparent that like public companies do. Everything that we do, we have to disclose because we're a publicly listed company under high level of scrutiny. And that to me keeps us transparent. People can know more about what we're doing than what others may know about what others are doing. And then we could also be someone that a company that someone can invest in and be a part of that success, believe in what it is that we're doing. You could go out and buy stock and help this company move forward on that basis. And maybe the private equity firms can go find another place to make money. That's one thing I love about the fact that we're a public company, that transparency and that access.
Right. Which is, it's so fascinating to bring that up in this light. It's a great segue over to David, and I'm going to swing over to him in a second. But as you were saying that, I'm going, God, man, you're a technology guy. You know, that's actually the opposite of, say, Michael Dell and some of these technology companies that went the other direction and said, I'm done with the public scrutiny. I can't move fast enough. But in this case, because of the story, because of the timing, because of what you guys are involved in, it's actually an advantage to your brand to be public, to be transparent, to have that as a part of your selling point around what you're building. It's like, we're putting our money where our mouth is. We're actually putting everything out there. We have to. We chose to be public. You didn't have to be public.
No, we didn't have to choose that route, but we did.
Right. And so, David, when you kind of pick up on that, man, I mean, that's got to be, again, I'm sitting here going, geez, this guy's got the job of the century. He gets to tell a circular story, right, and build a brand at this timing, because again, 10 years ago, this wouldn't work. 10 years into the future, you're probably too late. Timing is everything, right? And I wasn't even thinking about being public as a additive branding feature. So David, like, as you're kind of pick up on that a little bit, like, how are you now kind of expanding on that transparency and openness and circularity around what do you want people to hear about Aqua Metals 3 years from now? What do you want, if you've looked back in 3 years from now and you've done your brand building, storytelling, what do you want people to know?
I think in 3 years, I want people to say Aqua Metal set the standard for recycling.
Right.
We were the company that led the charge in bringing awareness to this part of the supply chain.
Right.
And we were the ones that pointed out that it's got to be done right. The government funding needs to be tied to doing it right.
Yeah.
And to just bring awareness around, the actual impact of certain kinds of recycling technologies, and that, we played a big role in steering this in the right direction. So we didn't make that mistake that I pointed out, I think, that we came up against in the lead industry, whereas, we build out this recycling infrastructure and we're going to need it. I mean, there's going to be millions of tons of batteries that need to get recycled. We're never going to be able to mine enough material to supply the manufacturer and to keep all these battery manufacturers running to meet demand. So if the recycling is going to have to be in place, it's going to be a huge portion of the raw material production, but it's got to get done right. So I hope then in 3 years, we look back and say, Aqua Metals played a big role in helping us do this the right way.
Well, let me ask a question on that one, because again, when we get into the circular story, and I think that's also, a fundamental attribute of what you're trying to achieve, because I agree with you. I mean, the word recycling sadly has been, misused, misappropriated, whatever you want to call it, misunderstood. So it's almost like you say recycling and it's like you almost kind of lose people sometimes. And one of the freshest with the word circularity, and I'm not trying to push it, but I'm just saying circularity for me kind of is a nice alternative because it really encompasses reuse, recycling, extension of life, whatever. Where I'm kind of going though is, you also connect the tail. I remember this when we were talking the last time we met a year ago or whatever, is that you also have a finite amount of lithium above ground, non-burgeon, about 750,000 tons that's been mined. That's a known quantity. To your point, we don't know how much lithium's in the ground, but it's fixed. It's finite. We can't get it all. My question is to you in the circular story, as you guys kind of take, I'm just going to say, one ton of, lithium in its current state that comes to you, how much loss is there in the circularity aspect of it? So how much can you preserve of the non-virgin lithium that's above ground already in this circular tail? You know what I mean? Like, to me, that's where my brain goes, is like, you guys are actually, what you're doing is saying, we don't want to mine anything anymore. We want to help the world stop mining virgin materials. And we're focused on all the stuff above ground. We can help it stay in use into perpetuity. Because every time it loses its charge, if you will, we can make it circular and we only lose less than 1%, or at least that I don't know what that is.
Yeah. And I think I would just say that our recovery rate on the materials we are recycling is going to be between 95 and 98% recovery. So that's great. And, on the lead battery side, few people know this, but lead acid batteries are the most recycled commodity on Earth. They could not keep recycling or mining lead fast enough to supply the battery. So 99% of all lead acid batteries are recycled.
Right.
Great sustainability story, great circularity story. The bad news is smelting is one of the worst things you can possibly do environmentally, anywhere, right? So that's the mistake that we don't want to repeat. We do want to repeat the circularity. So it's possible in lithium, lithium batteries, that we get a 99% recyclable rate. That's absolutely possible because it's been done before in lead.
Yep.
So let's learn the good lessons. Let's learn from the bad lessons of lead as well. I'd also add, right now I run commercial. And so it's very exciting to be in an industry that we're basically building from the ground up.
Yeah.
There's a lot of regulatory discussions. We're talking with DOE folks, and we're part of, sort of bleeding edge group of companies that are trying to shape this industry, build this industry. And we're talking with everybody. So building a domestic circular supply chain is critical to the U.S.
Yep.
We hope to be a big part of that. And we're talking to partners that we expect to work with in the future to have that as CAM manufacturers and OEMs really start ramping up battery production and electric car production. So everybody's sort of working towards that. And it's just an exciting time to be building these relationships. And everyone is really thinking about how do we build this domestic circular supply chain that's green. And it's forefront on everyone's mind. And I think the IRA bill has really instigated a thought around how do we do that domestically and how do we do it cleanly. So
right. And I knew this, it always happens. I knew this never can happen to you guys because I'm sitting here, I want 6 hours of you guys, not 1 hour. But you also touch on something which makes me, I have to ask this question. You talk about domestic, but aren't you guys more of a global story? Like, I mean, your story is truly global. And so I'm kind of curious from your point of view, you mentioned that a couple times. It's domestic. I get it. There's all the domestic, nearshore and bring it all in, get everything in here. But you really are telling a tale on a 10-20 year cycle that's global in scope, right?
Yeah.
Everything you're doing has a global circular story to it. The 750,000 tons of lithium that's mined is a global number, not a domestic U.S. number, even though we use a lot of it. But how do you view as the global tale? Again, you're telling a global story now for really, how do you differentiate with that or don't you even think about that at this point?
Well, I think from our strategic as a company, our strategic perspective is to start local. We are speaking globally though as well. We're having discussions with a lot of global partners. It's going to be a global business. with the funding and the emphasis and the support from the government nationally, I think it just makes sense for us strategically to kind of start here.
Right.
And certainly, you know, the EU is a place we're going to be looking to in Asia as well. And it is a global story. We certainly want to have an impact. That story around getting recycling right is one that needs to be told globally and understood globally so that, you know, we're not just doing it right in the US, but we're doing it right, you know, everywhere else as well.
Well,
one atmosphere and planet also.
Well,
that's massive global.
You be careful what you say sometimes, because I wasn't going to go there, but you start me thinking about, yes, we have one planet, but then all of a sudden I start thinking your technology off planet. There's applications towards what you are doing that solves for a problem, which we have today, which is we can ship people to Mars, but we can't get them back. We don't know how to actually extract in a clean, efficient way the core elements we need to fuel our travel around space. And I mean, again, this is just where my brain goes, oh my God, I'm seeing a nickel metals, you know, circular pod inside of the Starlink ship that Elon sends up so that you can get 99% return on that ship to be able to fuel it crap to get back.
Well, we might be able to recycle the batteries, but then we'd have to manufacture new ones too. It would have to be a whole
correct
supply chain.
But I'm going interstellar here now. Okay, so I don't want to go too far too quick. All right, so Steve, we got a few minutes left, but you know, I'm kind of winding down a little bit here. I mean, you guys, there's just so much going on here. Such a great story. You know, what are you guys coming up? I mean, we're sort of in the middle of summer. We got 4th of July coming up. Maybe you guys, thankfully, are taking a break after 10 years and fires and pandemics. Jesus, you guys deserve a little break. But, you know, over the next 6 months, what are you guys up to? What's going on? You guys going to be at conferences, speaking, doing the whole thing?
That's definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So we're definitely going to be attending conferences, and our news flow, well, because we're a public company, we'll be transparent.
Right.
And we've already publicly indicated that we're talking to a lot of partners, so, because when you have that pilot plant operating, people want to come and see it. And so we've been utilizing the function of the pilot, not only to refine the technology to build this commercial plant that we're now embarked upon building, but to build those relationships. And so the remainder of this year, a lot of it is, you know, cutting deals. So there's commercial opportunities and commercial deals. So David's a very busy man.
Yeah, all of you guys are, but yes.
And so there's that part of it. And then there's also just the activity associated around what it is that we're doing technically, and people coming to see it. Put it this way, no one has ever come and seen our facility and left underwhelmed or disappointed. And what we released today, along with our news update that we completed all the metals, was a video on the inside tour of the facility. So I'm in it, and then our VP of engineering, Chip Kenny, is in it, and also Ben Tacker, who's our chief engineering and operations officer, takes everybody through what it is, why it's special, why it's different. And so I think that you're going to see a lot more of that type of communication. Yeah. And we're being transparent, not only as we talk about being a public company, but we want to show the world and the industry, hey, we're not hiding anything here.
Yeah.
Taking a look.
Yep.
Let's find a way to work together.
Which is also refreshing, given also, and again, I've got my brand hat on here, and I'm going to go back to David to kind of close things out a little bit here, and we'll sum it up. But, you know, again, you're also addressing what is, I'm going to say, a reticence of the general public, because they've been kind of, you know, there's kind of this you know, sustainability wash, or what do you want, greenwashing that's happened for the last 10 or 15 years, right?
Yeah.
And that's also kind of a albatross around all of the sustainability advocates, because everyone's like, oh, I've heard this story before, you guys are all BS. Well, you guys are, everything's open, it's wide open, you know, here's what it is. And so David, as you're kind of looking at that kind of transparency, and again, same question to you, you know, what do you try to get out over the next 6 months, push in a big way, whether it's branding or, you know, commercial activities or anything, for your point of view, David?
Well, I think, the company's focus is really going to be to get that commercial facility up and running.
Right.
The pilot is up and running. We're making material. We've proved it to that scale. The next step is to get that commercial facility running and sell materials and start really bringing in revenue. On the business side and the commercial side, as Steve said, I'm very busy. And there are partners out there that are doing things that are very synergistic with our approach and our brand. So
right.
We take black mass to high purity metals and lithium hydroxide in a very green, sustainable way. There are folks that can take that material to cathode active material in a very sustainable way that we're talking to. And together we're going to go out and be able to offer basically a used battery to cathode material solution that is green and sustainable, domestic, and cost effective to OEMs and folks like that out there in the industry. So that's what we're focusing on, those kind of relationships and sort of like-minded partners that can help us build this infrastructure correctly and sustainable.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's just a fabulous story. Well, gentlemen, so Steve, David, we're kind of hitting the top of the hour, being conscious of time. That was an amazing, I'm sitting here going, I have pages I want to follow up on, but you know, great story. We'll obviously keep in touch. You guys are both highly available on LinkedIn, got the website, you're easy to find. Steve, anything last minute, you know, just little shout outs or anything?
No, I would just say a shout out to you and thank you for taking the interest in this is my shout out and wanting to explore and get a little deeper. I got to know myself a little better today.
I'd have one other shout out. Any engineers out there that want to work for Aqua Metals, we're looking for
this
people. Oh, well, see, that's exactly what I'm saying. Is like that. I'll pump that out there. Right?
That's a great.
Yeah, you guys are hiring engineers. So I'm assuming these are metallurgic engineers, not just or
chemical engineers, process engineers.
Okay.
Yep.
You guys are all in, you know, hiring signs on, you know, anybody that's got an engineering degree close to anywhere, NorCal or anything like that, doesn't matter where they are.
So there's some location flexibility for sure. But the other shout out is to Tahoe, Reno area. It's a great place to live.
No, oh, God.
No taxes.
Right. Oh, yeah. You know, the Barry's had its rough go here. But anyway, gentlemen. Thank you so much. Really been a pleasure. Been an awesome episode. Really a treat. And happy 4th of July to both of you guys.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Happy Independence Day.
Great talking to you.